You can find this podcast and others at Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
The Liberals Gun Corner, a proud member of the Gun Rights Radio Network, hosted by Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal with a gun. This podcast is always available at www.liberalsguncorner.com, and you can email us at cowboyt@liberalsguncorner.com. Cowboy T here. This is episode 27. We just had an election here recently in old Virginny. Yes, the Commonwealth. This was a three-way race between Democrat Terry McAuliffe, Libertarian Bob Sarvis, and Republican Ken Cuccinelli. Mr. McAuliffe won that race by, well, it was something like 3 or 4 points. It wasn't very much. Same thing happened for Lieutenant Governor, by the way. A fellow named Mr. Northam, a Democrat, defeated a Reverend Jackson, a Republican, E.W. Jackson, that is. Naturally, Democrats and their supporters are tickled pink. Republicans and their supporters, on the other hand, are bitterly disappointed. You know, I saw this same thing play out right around this time a year ago, folks. The difference is that this time it's at the state level instead of federal. Now, I've got a little bit I'd like to point out to my friends that supported the Republicans. Your candidate didn't win. And yeah, you're smarting from this. I can see it. It's just like last year. And you're doing everything I suppose is natural for humans to do. You're getting upset. You're pointing out all the out-of-state money from the likes of Michael Bloomberg and George Soros and other Clinton family supporters. And you're right, that's a problem. I grant that. However, that's not why your candidate's lost. See, I live in Virginia now, too. So I'd like to provide some insight as to why you're not getting the results you want. Would you like to start winning and stop losing? Seriously, ask yourself that. Do you want to start winning and stop losing like you have been recently? If the answer is no, well then, by all means, stop listening to this if you wish. That's okay with me. Nobody likes to be told that their baby's ugly. I understand that. I get it. But if your answer is yes, then I think you'll benefit next go around if you consider the insight I have to share with you here. The reason your candidate's lost is this. You're not choosing good candidates. Mr. Cuccinelli was just simply not a good candidate. If people are telling me the truth, not very many people like Terry McAuliffe outside the top Democratic Party bosses anyway. If they're telling me the truth, they really didn't want to vote for Terry McAuliffe. Not really. They didn't want to vote for him any more than you really wanted to vote for Mitt Romney a year ago. So why'd you do it? Why did you vote for Mitt Romney? You voted for Mr. Romney because you viewed Barack Obama as that bad. Well, same for those who voted for McAuliffe. It wasn't that they liked Mr. McAuliffe. They saw him for the corrupt party man that he is. Rather, it was that they saw the Cuccinelli-Jackson ticket as that bad. And it turns out they're right. That was not a good ticket to be running unless you're way deep in the Bible Belt. The problem is, both of your candidates are Bible thumpers. I'm a liberal, folks. I'm not going to vote for a theocrat, and neither are most other social liberals. I don't want anybody's religion being shoved down my throat. That's for doggone sure. And yes, that does include Christianity, too. You betcha. Oh, maybe a lot of evangelical social conservatives might be okay with that, but not the social liberals like me. The fact that Mr. Cuccinelli came within just a few points doesn't say that he was particularly good. No. Rather, it reflects that Mr. McAuliffe was not very good. Basically, McAuliffe voters held their noses and voted not for McAuliffe, but rather against Cuccinelli. Much like how you didn't really vote for Mitt Romney, but you voted against Barack Obama in 2012. So what that tells me is this. Even with all that Bloomberg, Soros, Clinton money behind Mr. McAuliffe, remember, He only won by a few percentage points, folks. A decent candidate on the Republican side probably would have pulled out the win. Oh, and another thing I keep hearing from the Republican supporters is this. Bob Sarvis, the Libertarian candidate, quote-unquote stole votes from the Republican ticket. Folks, let's get something straight, okay? The only way you can steal votes is by committing something called election fraud. And to my knowledge, there's no indication and there's not even the suggestion that Mr. Sarvis did that. So there's no way he could have quote-unquote stolen votes from anybody. It's called running a campaign. And if you do a decent job, you're going to get some votes. That's what he did. Nothing more, nothing less. I hear my conservative friends talking a lot about personal responsibility. That's a big thing that I hear from them a lot. Personal responsibility. Well, I'm with you on that. I believe in personal responsibility too. So let's talk about that for just a moment. You're hurting. You're doing what humans often do when they don't get what they want, especially when they really want it. You know, a lot of you are lashing out and you're blaming all these external factors. You're ignoring the internal factor. This would be your choice of candidates. Remember, when it comes down to it, ultimately, you choose these candidates. You chose Mr. Cuccinelli and Mr. Jackson as your candidates. And from talking with a lot of you, it's because you wanted a strong conservative ticket. Well, you got that. And you got your hats handed to you at election time, too. That cannot feel good. My Republican friends, you got to choose better candidates if you want to start winning again. Terry McAuliffe could have been beaten with a better candidate. I'm serious. His momentum would have gotten pulled like a rug right out from under him, and he would have fallen right on his backside, something which personally I would have loved seeing. So, instead of getting all bent out of shape now and pointing to all these external factors, let's look to future elections instead. Now, imagine if, next time around, you choose someone similar to Mr. Sarvis, who I remind all of you was originally a Republican. But see, here's the thing. He's not a Bible thumper, so he didn't get any play. Do you all know that Mr. Sarvis got a lot of votes from younger people? Yeah, he did. Watch the young people, folks. In a generation or two, they're the ones that'll be making the decisions. Ah, but what about the liberals? All those dang liberals. I remind you all that I am a liberal. As I often remind you all, the fact that I am a liberal does not mean I'm a Democrat. I could vote for a Republican candidate that's actually good and truly represents the Constitution. I've done it before. I could do that again. And I'm going to let you in on a little secret. There are a lot of voters here in Virginia just like me that way. Just like me. So, just how do you get those folks like us to consider the GOP next time? What you need to do is, basically, pick an old school liberal, a Jeffersonian style liberal, and run that kind of candidate. Yeah, sure, old Thomas Jefferson had his faults. Plenty of them. Most human beings do, present company included. But consider this. Jefferson believed in smaller government. He believed in personal responsibility. He believed in the right to keep and bear arms. Sound familiar so far? Good, stick with me. He also believed that you have the right to practice whatever religious beliefs you want, or none at all. That's your business. He certainly didn't believe in telling people what they're legally allowed to do or not in the privacy of their bedrooms. Oh, and being a deist as he was, he certainly was not a Bible thumper. He had one, sure, of course he did. But he didn't go around the country thumping it over people's heads like I see some people doing today. Oh, and for you nitpickers, yes, I'm speaking figuratively, mostly. Thomas Jefferson, like the other founding fathers, was basically all about the Constitution. He was all about the Constitution. He was one of our original liberals. Do this. Pick candidates like that, and you will win elections. You will start winning again. And guess what? you'll have liberals like me on your side. The Republican Party cannot stay a Bible-thumping, Confederacy-worshipping, Christians-only group. You've got to evolve past that and go back to your constitutional roots from way, way back. And I don't mean just talking about it either. I mean for real. I mean actually doing it. You know, and I know, the Democrats have become so against the Constitution of the United States. Folks, it makes me sick. Well, if you really want it, you have the chance to take us back toward constitutional principles. But that's the key. If you really want to do it. The opportunity is there. And there are future elections coming up. So think about it, my Republican supporting friends. Seriously, I want you to think about this. Not just for the good of Virginia. Not just for Virginia. But for the good of the whole country. Please think about this. We'll be right back after station ID break.
You can hear Gun Rights Radio Network on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Gun Rights Radio Network shows can be found under sources.
We're back, folks. You know, it's been a long time since we called our military veterans those terrible names like baby killer and such and spit on their faces. Today, things are very different. We hail them as people of honor, especially if they went over to the sand pit. You know, guys like Dakota Meyer, Clint Romisha, Ty Carter, Captain William Swenson, who just got his Medal of Honor. All these guys, by the way, these four guys are Medal of Honor awardees. Ty Carter says he still has nightmares about what happened over there. And, well, given what they saw over there, I wouldn't be surprised if the other guys do, too. A lot of Vietnam vets still do. Even some of the World War II and Korea vets still do. And that's even after all these years. So when I see what looks like mistreatment toward anyone, and especially a military veteran, yeah, I take notice. Seems down in Georgia, you know, where the devil went down looking for a soul to steal. Yeah, I like that song too. Who doesn't? Now, anyway, an Army vet has a disabled daughter going to some school called McBean Elementary School. She was a parent volunteer there. Things were going okay, you know, hunky-dory, just fine, happy, happy, joy, joy. Until this Army vet went and got her Georgia weapons carry license. Yeah, she posted a picture of the permit on her Facebook page. Seems she was kind of happy about getting her permit. She blocked out her address and certain other stuff, you know. But you can see her name, her height, and her weight on it. The permit was issued just last month on October 10th, 2013. Her name is Mrs. Tanya Mount. Well, seems that shortly after she did this and posted her picture there up on Facebook, the picture of the permit, she was issued a criminal trespass warning by the police. Yeah. When she asked why, she was told the principal, get this, the principal had her banned from the school. Here's the story.
The parent of an elementary school student says she's been banned from her daughter's school after posting what she believes is a harmless picture on Facebook.
Yeah, the post showed a picture of her new concealed weapons permit. Our On Your Side reporter Jerome Collins spoke with that parent today. And Jerome, she says she believes the picture started the whole thing in progress.
Absolutely right. Tanya Mount says she's being targeted by the principal at McBean Elementary School.
I feel like a criminal. I want to be heard. I want a public apology.
On Wednesday, Tanya Mount says she was handed this notice from Richmond County Board of Education Police.
He tells me that we're going to issue you a criminal trespass warning,
banning her from McBean Elementary School, where her disabled daughter attends. She asked what she did wrong.
The principal is scared of you. She doesn't want you on the grounds. I'm like, for what? He's like, were you in the Army? I said, yes. He's like, do you have a concealed weapons permit? I'm like, yes.
Mount, who is a parent volunteer, says she is banned from the school for posting this picture of her new concealed weapons permit on her Facebook page. She says she never had any problems with Principal Janina Dallas, says she was blindsided weeks earlier during a meeting with Dallas.
She told me that instead of volunteering at the school and playing on the playground with my daughter, I need to be at home doing grown-up things.
We tried to speak with the principal, but were told she was unavailable. A district official did tell us the principal met with Mount regarding her role as parent volunteer, but did not know the full details of the meeting. Mount says she feels targeted for no reason.
I feel that this is some high school crap. He said, she said, she should have contacted me to find out for herself, to ask me, instead of taking the legal route, and which was uncalled for.
Now, we do have a quick update. I just talked to that mother this afternoon. She now says the district has given her permission to transfer her daughter from McBean to another elementary school.
Now, folks, I'm not seeing why this principal felt the need to be scared of Mrs. Mount. The principal's name is Janina Dallas, by the way. And furthermore, I'm not sure why all of a sudden a principal would berate a parent for volunteering at her daughter's school. Oh, and I'm not sure why this principal would be telling this mother that she should be at home doing grown-up things. Remember, I am myself a former school employee. We have parent volunteers in quite a few of our schools. Heck, a lot of teachers wish that the parents would be more involved than a lot of the parents seem to be nowadays. I saw that myself, so I can confirm it. Could it really be, folks, that this principal got scared of this Army vet getting her carry permit? Seriously? Seriously? If so, then frankly, I think that's pretty stupid. First, getting a carry permit is certainly not against the law. Matter of fact, that's a pretty good indication that someone's a law abider. That's good. We want that. Second, she's an Army vet. I know from experience, since I was in the Air Force, that all the services do expose you to firearms. You do get a healthy appreciation for the fact that a fast-moving thing like a bullet that strikes a person will probably kill them. So you don't typically go off doing stupid stuff with firearms. Now that was true even in the Air Force of the late 1980s, so I know they got at least that much in the Army, too. So why in the name of heaven would this principal be, you know, quote-unquote afraid or scared or whatever of this Army vet? Remember, folks, public schools are not exactly known for being bastions of respect for the Second Amendment, and sometimes the First Amendment either. Oh, and that's true even when you did nothing wrong. Remember that these are the same institutions that toss kids out of school for things like assault Pop-Tarts and have 14-year-olds handcuffed and arrested by the police for the crime of wearing a pro-NRA t-shirt. You heard it. Mrs. Mount was asked, "Are you an Army veteran? And do you have a concealed weapons permit?" And this was by the cop when she asked what was going on. The cop asked her all that. Folks, it looks to me like a really silly and, frankly, downright insulting way to handle a situation. That principal should have been happy that someone was abiding Georgia state law. Oh, and apparently encouraging others to abide by Georgia state law. You know, this whole follow the law if you want to carry in Georgia, get your permit, all that. I thought following the law was supposed to be good. So here's my question. How is it that we as a society allow this sort of lunacy on the part of our public school administrators? And since we as a people apparently allow it, is this a case of us, the people, getting what we deserve until we finally get mad enough to do something about it? I know some of you are thinking, oh, this is one isolated incident, Cowboy T. Don't indict our entire public school system on just this one isolated incident. Okay, fair enough, and you got a point. I would not indict an entire school system on just one incident like this. That would indeed be unfair. Well, I would suggest you take a listen to episode 18 and then see what you think. Sure do seem to be a whole lot of these so-called isolated incidents happening nowadays. It's all part of that zero tolerance nonsense that I call zero intelligence, because that's what it is. Apparently, it's not enough to throw five-year-old little girls out of school and documenting them as terrorists for having those Hello Kitty plastic bubble makers that they sell at the Toys R Us. It's no longer enough to toss a kid out for a make-believe game of Army Save the World in the playground during recess. No longer enough to come down hard on a kid for making a play cannon out of Legos. Nope. Now they're also doing it to the parents for the ghastly crime of joining the army and following the law. Ooh. Isolated incidents, huh? Sure does seem to be a lot of them. And we're allowing this? Be right back.
The forums are a great place to interact with the podcasters and listeners to your favorite podcast. Visit gunrightsradio.com and click on the forums button at the top of the page and sign up for your free membership. Gunrightsradio.com.
The anniversary of the terrible shooting in Newtown, Connecticut is coming up pretty soon. It's been almost a year. I don't know if for those of you who haven't been to a gun show, they're pretty major events. Even the smaller ones are planned a long time in advance. I'm talking months, maybe even a year. So the big ones really need advanced planning. Turns out there was a rather large and very popular gun show scheduled for late December of 2012, just after Christmas. Also turns out the Newtown shooting happened 2 weeks before this gun show was already scheduled to go on. Timing, obviously, couldn't have been worse. Well, the Code Pink organization decided to mount a protest at this gun show. We of the Virginia Citizens Defense League found out about it, this protest, the day it was supposed to happen. Since I was the one who was available, I decided to show up and represent the pro-Second Amendment position in a counter-protest. Turned out to be about, 15 of the Code Pink folks there when I arrived. I talked about this in some detail back in episode 11. At the time, I hadn't found any audio of it to share with you. Well, it turns out I didn't look hard enough. There was not just an audio, turns out, but the video as well. A fellow named Rhett Rebold decided to cover it and post it up. So you're going to hear two sides of this, the Code Pink side and the pro-Second Amendment side. Please, by the way, do pardon the occasional background noise from vehicles. It was a very busy gun show, as I'm sure you can imagine. Here it goes.
There are individuals, up to 40% of sellers in gun shows are selling guns without background checks. Do not let anyone tell you that individuals are not selling guns without background checks. They are. It's a large loophole in this in our country, and it's so big, it's like a fishing net. Colin Goddard, who was shot four times during the Virginia Tech massacre, he has gone undercover into gun shows and proven again and again. It has been proven so many times. I mean, here you have a brother of a massacre victim, Rima. Rima Samaha was one of the 32 murders. And Omar, her brother, was so outraged. I mean, you got to love a brother that's going to get to the bottom of this and fight to save future American lives. The Virginia Tech massacre victims' families have been unbelievable. I mobilized with them since the week of the massacre, actually. And we have fought hard to close the gun show loophole in Virginia, and now we're fighting hard at the national level.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Every nation.
including arms.
You're also not allowed to bring loaded guns into this gun show. And yet they want loaded guns in our children's schools.
So what brought you out today?
Their protest actually brought me out here.
Oh, okay.
I'm here to offer a differing point of view,
okay.
As is my First Amendment right as well, just as theirs is. I'm a little bit ticked off that they were ordered off of the property in there. I think they ought to be over there protesting where the First Amendment says that they should be able to.
Yeah, I wondered about that.
Yeah, I know. Maybe it's technically private property, but it's a public forum. As a matter of fact, that's why I march in support of the Second Amendment, because it backs up the ability to maintain the First Amendment. They have the right to protest because we the people can resist against a tyrannical government.
Yeah.
That's why I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm here for them as much as I am for me, and they don't realize that.
How many governments allow like the extended magazines, private ownership?
Well, tell me what you mean by extended magazine.
Oh, I guess over 15 or so shot clip.
Well, actually, I would say you're talking about, like, for example, the 30-round magazines or the 17-round magazines that you see with blocks, say AR-15 style, right?
Yeah, sure.
Actually, that's as designed. I'm former Air Force. Something about these particular rifles. Unfortunately, the term assault weapon is thrown around far too often, and having used a real assault weapon, an actual M16, I can tell you that the AR-15 sold in that gun show are not assault weapons. They would never be allowed on the battlefield by the Army, Navy, Air Force, or Marines. They wouldn't. They can't go full auto. They can't do it. So when they say military style, I'm wondering really what they mean. Mm-hmm. And so I asked them, and they say, well, it looks military. You know,
yeah.
It's like a weapon of war. Well, what about this one?
Yeah.
I asked them, and they say, well, that's.
Well, what are you carrying there today?
Well, this is a Mosin Nagant rifle. It's a Mosin Nagant M91/30. It's basically the Russian version of our M1903/30-06.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, basically. It shoots a slightly different cartridge, but it's of the same rough class. This rifle probably saw combat against Nazi Germany back in the day, back in World War II.
Does that have, like, 7 or 8 round clips, something like that?
Let's see. Actually, this one happens to shoot 5. But see, this is an actual military weapon. It's not just a military-style firearm. It's an actual military rifle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what's this? You know, is this a so-called assault weapon to them? After all, it's not just military-style. It's real military.
Well, it's bolt-action, though, so it's a little bit slow, huh?
Not if you're good.
Uh-huh.
if you practice with your firearm, then you become very fast indeed. And you're right, semi-automatic fire is going to be considerably more accurate than full auto any day. There's a place for full auto, there's a place for semi-auto, there's a place for bolt, there's a place for lever guns. What is an assault weapon? 60 years ago, they would have called this that. You know, where did you draw the line? They might call I've got a lever gun that I use in George Burley. They might call that an assault weapon. Okay, then we get to the question, what constitutes a normal, quote-unquote normal, firearm?
Yeah.
What is it? Yeah, what is one? And
well, and I think that needs to be the debate, maybe, you know?
I would argue that it constitutes any of these semi-automatic or bolt action or anything else sold in this gun show that we are still having. An AR-15 or similar semi-automatic rifle is a normal firearm. As a matter of fact, it is called a modern sporting rifle.
Mm-hmm.
You can and do go hunting with the rifle. Matter of fact, AR-10s, which is the 308 Winchester version of the same rifle, is commonly used for deer hunting. Why? Because it's light. It's easy to carry in the woods. I know, because I've held one. They are remarkably light. Lighter than this big thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that really begs the question. What constitutes normal?
Oh, the AR-15 is a favorite rifle of the IRA, mostly because it could be gotten legally in the U.S., you know, and shipped over to Northern Ireland. So, I mean, it has, you know, you can do some damage.
You can do damage with anything. You can do damage with this BMW that's driving right by us.
Yeah.
Thank you. So, or this SUV, this Toyota Tundra, you can do a lot of damage with that. I know of cases when deranged people run over little kids waiting at the bus stop.
Yeah.
But we don't ban automobiles. We blame properly the perpetrator.
Yeah, yeah, I think that certainly has to be a huge part of the equation, doesn't it?
But they don't do that. I mean, these folks over here don't want to do that. They don't want to blame the perpetrator. They want to blame the tool, and I think that's a mistake.
No, I think it's a combination myself, but yeah, okay.
So,
well, very good. All right, well, thank you. And your sign says what?
San Francisco liberal with a gun.
Okay.
I'd like to publicly thank Mr. Rhett Riebold over at Story of America for presenting the other side, the pro-Second Amendment side, largely unedited. He did a rather good job, I think. He presented it as I actually said it. His website, www.storyofamerica.org, has a stated purpose of showing the depth of our current political divisions over the last year. It's worth your perusal. You ought to go visit and check it out. Red and I don't necessarily agree on everything. Personally, to me, he seems more on the side of the Code Pink position than the pro-Second Amendment position. But guess what? That's okay. This is America, and we get to do that here. It's important that we remember that. Just like you heard me say, the First Amendment is just as important as the Second Amendment. And while I disagreed with the position of the Code Pink folks quite strenuously, make no mistake, nonetheless, I fully and completely support their right to peacefully express it, which is exactly what they were doing. Yep, even though I disagree with them. Phil Donahue was right. We'll be right back.
This podcast is supported from donations from listeners like you. Thank you for your support. We welcome one-time donations or a $2 a month subscription to help support this podcast and Gun Rights Radio Network in its effort to bring you the high-quality pro-Second Amendment podcasts. Every dollar you donate goes directly back into the network. So visit gunrightsradio.com and click on the donation button. We accept all types of credit cards, and PayPal accounts are not required. Gunrightsradio.com.
We got a listener that goes by the name Have Blue. I'm guessing he's a fan of stealth airplanes. Anyway, he suggested that perhaps we discuss range safety etiquette. Why? Because there are a lot of new shooters out here, and that's a good thing. However, they often do not know how to conduct themselves at a publicly available shooting range. He mentioned to me, "Hey, Cowboy T, since you're a range safety officer, how might you guide a potential new shooter on a range? Or maybe even an old shooter who's only shot with friends, you know, in the backyard or some private land?" It's a good question, Mr. Blue. And yeah, you're right, that's an important topic. Range etiquette. I've seen plenty of examples of proper range behavior. And, of course, I've seen plenty of examples of improper range behavior. So let's talk about that. Up until very recently, I was an active range safety officer. That is true. Also called a range master, by the way. Both terms are correct and appropriate. We use them interchangeably. Publicly available ranges typically have several what we call lanes. For those of you who've been to publicly available shooting ranges, just bear with me for a moment. I'm also taking care of the new folks. It's just like lanes on most public roads. The difference is you get assigned your lane by, well, not you yourself, but the range master. The range master assigns you to a lane, and you stay in that lane unless the range master says otherwise. Usually we'll reassign people to a different lane if, oh, say the target carrier, and that's the thing that moves your target forward and backward, say that malfunctions for some reason. Or if there's an issue with the lighting or whatever. The range master always assigns your lane to you. Which brings me to our first rule of range etiquette. The range master is always right. I'm serious. You're in your lane focusing on your target just like you're supposed to. As the RSO, I'm focusing on all of you and what's going on, just like I'm supposed to. I know, you've got just one more round in your magazine that you'd like to squeeze off. You're just itching to squeeze off that last one. But even so, if we call a ceasefire, that means stop right now. Do not squeeze off that last shot, another shot. It doesn't matter that it's just one more. follow the range master's instructions. You may not see that other person six lanes down that, oh, just accidentally swung the business end of his gun at all of you. And we range masters have got to put a stop to it right now. So even if you think it's a bit asinine, please do what the range master says. If you don't, the range master has full authority to eject you from the range. And I've done that a couple times. And remember, we range masters do carry fully loaded guns. There's a reason. So please, do like the range master says. Second rule of etiquette. Please don't shoot the ceiling, okay? Think about the angle that you're shooting at. There's physics involved in all this. If you're short and you're going for a headshot on the target at close range, you're probably going to hit the ceiling. You might also hit the target carrier, and that, I assure you, will cost you a lot of money. Yes, we've seen that happen, and believe me, the credit cards do not like that happening to them. Please, if you don't know how to aim a gun just yet, if you don't know what a proper sight picture is yet, take a class first. I know the classes aren't exactly cheap, but believe me, it really is worth it. This is guns we're talking about here, after all. This is literally deadly serious business. Third rule of etiquette. All firearm handling is done only in your lane. That includes taking it out of its case and putting it back in, too. Yes, it does. Usually there is a table in the lane where you can set your firearm and your ammunition. Please, never, ever take your gun out when you're not in your lane. Why? It's because we range masters have to assume that you just might mean to do something really bad with it. And that may be the farthest thing from your mind. But we don't know that. Remember that fellow who shut up the Navy Yard like he did? He didn't exactly tell his victims, hey, I'm going to shoot at you now, look out. And it's also, by the way, a major violation of the second rule of firearm safety. Never point the business end of a gun at anything you don't intend to destroy. And that leads to rule of etiquette number 4. Always follow the rules of firearms safety. There are no exceptions. I don't care what you may do in your backyard on your 50 or 60 acres. You ain't there now. You're on my range. You will follow the rules of firearm safety when you're on my range. You break them, I will very quickly correct you. And if it's bad enough, I will eject you, pure and simple. Sound harsh? Not to me. Uh-uh. There is absolutely no room for negotiation here. None. We're talking about a gun here. And once that bullet leaves the muzzle, folks, you ain't calling it back home. It's out there moving faster than Superman until it strikes something. We always want that something to be the backstop. Oh, what's a backstop? Well, that's the far end of the range that catches all those bullets you're putting down range. It can be made of various materials, shredded tire rubber, sand. It could be a thick angled metal trap. There's several types, and they all work well. That's the only place we ever want bullets to end up. Now, since I mentioned follow the rules of firearm safety, well, what are they? Fair question. There are actually two sets of rules for firearm safety. There's Jeff Cooper's 4 rules, and there are the NRA's 3 rules. Both sets are valid, and they basically say the same thing. I personally use a combination of both of these rule sets to make my own 5 rules of safety. Here they are. Number 1. All guns are always loaded. There is no such thing as a quote-unquote unloaded gun, and you must always treat any gun as loaded. Matter of fact, I like to tell new shooters that the most dangerous things in the world are drunk drivers and quote-unquote unloaded guns. I'm serious. 2. Never, ever point the muzzle, and that's the business end, of any gun at anything you do not intend to destroy, because you probably will. The other way of saying this is, always point the muzzle of any gun in a safe direction. Either way, it's correct. Please follow it. Number 3. Keep that trigger finger off of the trigger and outside of the trigger guard until you get your sights on the target. Here's another way I like to put it so people remember it. It goes like this. Keep that booger hook off of the bang switch till you get your sights on target. Yeah, I get some laughs, but you know what? People remember it, and that's what we want. Number four, be sure of your target, yes, and also what's behind that target. All you cops out there, you know what I'm talking about. Say you've got to put down the bad guy. You got him in your sights. You're about to pull the trigger and, well, do what you got to do. But then you see that 9-year-old little kid right behind that bad guy. Yes, bullets can and do go through your target, and they keep right on going, mad as a hornet. That means it can go right through that bad guy and hit that little kid too. Whoops. Not good. Now, at the range, your target's a piece of paper, and what's behind it is the backstop, nice and safe. But remember, you're doing this gun thing because, let's face it, you're aware that someday you just might be in a situation where you need to use that gun of yours. So, even at the range, always think about this. 5. Keep that gun unloaded until you're actually ready to use it. If you walk away from your lane to go to the bathroom, hey, no problem. Go for it. But please unload your firearm before you walk away from that gun. For revolvers, that means eject any rounds still in the cylinder and leave the cylinder open so we range masters can see it's unloaded. For semi-autos and full autos, that means drop that magazine, or for M1 Garand, your clip, and lock your slider bolt back, again, so we range safety officers can see it's unloaded. Now, when you're back from your potty break or your smoke break or whatever, and you're ready to go punch some paper again, then yeah, sure, load back up. This only takes a few seconds, folks. So, those are Cowboy T's 5 rules of firearm safety. Please follow them at all times, whether you're at the range or not. That's rule of etiquette number 4. Follow the rules of firearm safety. Now, continuing on with the rules of etiquette, here's rule of etiquette number 5. You see all those ammo cases that just came out of your gun? All those shiny yellow or silver pieces of brass? Yeah. Please do clean up after yourself and sweep up your lane after you're done shooting. At most ranges, you can either sweep them forward of this red line, which means don't ever go past it, but you can sweep your brass forward of that. Or alternately, they've got dustpans and a brass bucket behind you. Either one is fine. The reason we ask you to do this is out of courtesy to other shooters who are going to follow you. You wouldn't want to walk into a messy lane, right? You wouldn't want to be stepping on all those hard pieces of metal, right? Well, same with other people. Just courtesy here. And speaking of brass cases, that leads to rule of etiquette number 6. If you're a hand loader, please ask if it's okay before you go picking up other people's brass. At our range, you're allowed to pick up your own brass. That's called policing your brass, by the way. Of course you're allowed to do that. It's yours. You bought it. I know a lot of rangers say anything on the floor is theirs, but really, truthfully, you know, most of us aren't going to mind too much if you pick up a little extra, as long as you don't get greedy. Just show a little class. But remember, you may not be the only reloader there. For example, I'm a reloader. I go to the range, too. Guess what? I'm shooting .45 ACP nowadays. I police my brass, and I reuse it. Why? Because that's the most expensive part of the ammunition, and therefore that's how I save a lot of money. I see you going after my brass cases. I'm not going to like that. Matter of fact, I'm probably going to get up in your face. And then, after that, I'm going to get the range master. And if I'm the RSO on duty, yes, we will be having a little talk. Major violation of range etiquette if you do that without asking. Come on. Just ask first. Show a little class. That shooter whose brass you want may say no, yeah. Like me. I would say no because I use it. But they might also say yes. Just ask first. And finally, rule of etiquette number 7. If you see anyone doing anything unsafe, yes, you are allowed to call them on it. And that actually happened to me one time, by the way, when I was new to shooting. This is a few years ago. I was at some range. Someone in another lane told me, hey, would you keep that thing pointed downrange? Well, I didn't like being told what to do. It stung my ego a little at the moment, truth be told. But, oh well, tough luck. I had to swallow that ego of mine because guess what? That guy was 100% right on. So I can tell you, having been on the receiving end once, people need to check their egos at the door. If I can, everyone else can too. Oh, and if they don't clean up their act, or if they get an attitude, come get the rangemaster. That's what we're there for. That's our job. We're here for you for that. I have no problem at all with a customer coming up to me and saying, hey, this person's not keeping their gun pointed downrange or whatever else. Really, we do not mind at all. It's our job, our very reason for being out there. This is guns, folks, and safety comes before any other considerations. And we really mean any other considerations. Egos definitely need to be checked at the door when it comes to safety. And every one of us who wears that red shirt means business about that. Seriously, you can come to us. Do not be afraid to come to us. Now, after hearing all this, I know what some of you may be thinking. Some of these rules of etiquette, it seems pretty darn silly that I should even have to say some of them, doesn't it? Sounds like just good old-fashioned common sense, doesn't it? Well, yeah, it does. And that's kind of the point of all this. Basically, use your head. Just use common sense, and you're going to be just fine. Indoor ranges are actually a pretty good resource, especially for handgun practice. Oh, and especially when the weather's not so good like, you know, it's about to become because winter is coming upon us. I'm sure glad I have one available to me. This is Cowboy T signing off. Till next time. Till then, safe shoot. Practice often. And as always, thanks for listening.